Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Western and Christian civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Jennings Wright, who has a mission in Uganda, and they've had some problems over there. And so she's going to bring us up to date with what's happening to Christianity in Uganda. Hi, Jennings. Thank you very much for being with us again. Why don't you give us the background, your background, who you are, why you're over there in Uganda, and what is taking place in Uganda today?
Okay. Thanks for having me. I have had a ministry in Uganda for about 5 years, almost exactly. We work with women and children in the slums, street kids, hospice, building a primary school at a baby's home, and the work has grown over the 5 years. Just, you know, we started with one thing, it kind of expanded, and mostly we work with the same people. We try and have relationships, foster them along, help them start businesses. You know, we don't sort of hit and miss around. We kind of work with the same people. So what has happened a few weeks ago on July 27th, the government came through the slums with bulldozers and tore down everything within 30 meters, which is about 100 feet, of the railway line. Now, there is no actual train at the moment, except for the one that the president has to do his campaigning every 6 years. But the country discovered oil in the north a few years ago, and one of the things that President Museveni has said that they're going to do is make travel easier within the country, so they're going to restart this railway line that the British had put down many years ago. So our assumption is that this is sort of a show of, you know, we're doing something. I think Kampala's kind of in this new phase of becoming a better city and all that. But what they've done is they've torn down, with people in them barely getting out alive, the homes of a couple thousand people. These people don't have lawyers. They don't have, you know, any voice. They don't have what they have is now gone. And so what we're trying to do is get those people back into housing, back with food, back with businesses, you know, send some back to their village if they want to go. A lot of them are displaced from the north anyway. And so that's what we've been working on.
Now, how long a distance along the railroad did they tear the homes out? I assume that these were more or less shacks that people had built adjacent to the railroad, and the railroad gave them a pathway to get probably into town. But over what distance are we talking about? A few hundred yards, a few miles, or what?
Miles.
Miles.
Yeah, it's miles. If you go, now, our ministry partner, Ray of Hope, is actually marked for destruction. They, with some other of the nicer homes on the outer edge of this one stretch, have gotten attorneys, and they are supposed to go to court actually next week to try and either stop it or get compensation. What the government said is, well, we have illegitimate, you know, houses here, and we need to take them down, but they weren't. There's land title. People have title to that land. And we're talking several miles, probably. I've walked from one end to the other, I'm going to say maybe 4 miles.
All right. Now, did the majority of the people, you know, with their small shacks, did they have any title? Or is it just that the better homes?
No, some of them have title. And they're paying rent to landlords who have title. And some of them are actually block buildings. They weren't all just shanties. I mean, some of them were.
Hold that thought. Our guest is Jennings Wright. We're talking about what's going on in Uganda. I'll be back in a moment.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Garlic, there's no medicine, natural or pharmaceutical, that can top it. Whether it's your arteries, your immune system, your heart, or your brain, garlic protects in incomparable ways. And garlic not only boosts your immune system, but directly attacks all incoming bacteria, viruses, and fungi. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Most researchers use allicin, garlic's primary active ingredient, which common garlic pills don't produce because acid in the stomach destroys the enzymatic production process. Garlazyme is the exception. Its patented alkaline mineral base protects the enzyme that activates allicin in the acidic stomach. And garlazyme also buffers garlic's pungency, odor, and breath. It's sociable garlic. Buy garlazyme in quantity for less than $9 a month, and shipping is free. Call 866-674-3955 to order garlazyme now. Garlazyme, it's the goodness of Mother Nature for civilized society. 866-674-3955.
Now you can get the same survival food U.S. Special Forces use on their toughest field missions. High protein, high energy, freeze-dried foods known as long-range patrol rations or LRPs. Soldiers love LRP rations. They're lightweight and easy to carry. Easy to prepare by just adding water. Easy to enjoy because they taste great. Civilians love LRPs as a solution for emergency preparedness and recreational activities with limited storage space, such as hiking, climbing, sailing, or RV travel. Veteran-owned Freeze Dry Guy is your exclusive source for this 2013 U.S. military overrun. Long on nutrition, these delicious entrees have a long shelf life lasting decades. But this rare opportunity, this limited supply, will not last long. You have to act now. Call 866-404-3663, 866-404-FOOD, or log on now to freezedryguy.com, freezedryguy.com.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sonny Jennings is simply saying that Uganda is, first of all, an English-speaking nation. It's a Christian nation. Not everybody's a Christian, but the vast majority of the people are. It's a joyful nation. The people actually have a wonderful time there. She has regular prayer sessions with many of the women who live in Uganda. But, of course, for some reason, the government has simply wiped out this whole area, maybe 4 miles along the railway track, with the idea that somehow, maybe down the line, they'll start using the railway. And yet, of course, they don't even have a train. But what they have done is go in with bulldozers and simply take out the people's homes. And, of course, saying the people don't have certainly title to the property. And many of these people do have title to the property. So basically, what as you are doing, I know you've come home to try to raise funds and get help for the people there. So what are you doing? What are the people's alternatives?
Well, the main thing, I mean, right now we're raising money between 1018, my ministry, and International Women's Organization in Kampala, and another American ministry. We've raised about $7,000 so far. And what we're doing with that is sort of multi-pronged. The first stage is to get food and shelter to these people. So the ones who are willing to go back to their villages, and many were displaced, you know, a decade ago when the LRA was in the north, they came to Kampala. They can go back now. It's safe, so we are encouraging those who want to go back and helping them to relocate back to the north. That's better than living in the slums anyway, so that's, you know, kind of option number one. Option number two is giving them 3 months' rent, because in Uganda, that's what you have. You have to pay 3 months' rent at one time. So we're giving them 3 months rent, 100,000 shillings, which is about $37 sort of reprovision, you know, get mattresses, get mosquito nets, get a cook pot, that sort of thing. We're giving 50 families a basket of emergency food staples, beans and pasta and rice and cooking oil and things to sort of get them reestablished. That's sort of the first food shelter, get them off the street, out of churches, which are basically open air build. You know, they're not what we would call a church. We wouldn't consider it a church. We'd consider it a shack. That's the first thing. The second thing is to, for the ladies that we've worked with for 4 years now, giving micro business grants who have lost the business that they had, you know, been able to build, is to get grants back to them because they know how to do it. They've been successful. They know what they're doing, but now they've lost all their capital. They've lost, you know, everything that they had. So to try and get them reestablished so that they can get back to where they were before this happened.
And basically these people are selling various things. Is that what the business, when you talk about business, in America, why we often think of a Walmart, we think of Target. But I think when you talk about business in Africa, you're talking about somebody operating on $50 to $100, you know, for the entire business. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes, we give micro business grants typically between 50,000 shillings and 100,000 shillings. So that's probably about $17 to about $37 to get them started. And the most typical businesses are selling produce, which means they have to walk several miles each way to a market to get fresh things. Then there's one to sell more but you know they buy dried beans or they buy charcoal, things that they don't have to go so often to get, and then they resell that. There's people who secondhand clothes is a big thing, secondhand bras and secondhand pants and secondhand blouses and things like that. Those are the main things that they do. And they need very little capital. The problem is not that they're not hardworking or that they're not smart. The problem is they just don't have the money to initially buy, you know, the first bunch of produce or the first round of secondhand clothing. And once they do that and we work alongside them, they know they need to keep preserve the capital to reinvest, put a little bit to grow the business, but, you know, that then they're able to feed their children, pay their rent and things that they had not been able to do before just because nobody had invested in them before.
And what are these? Is just open air markets that they have?
They do. The markets, ironically, are along the railroad tracks, so the markets are gone. They do a lot of the clothing in particular. They will hawk clothing during times where the traffic is busy, the foot traffic or car traffic. So they'll pick a spot and just sort of walk up and down the street with, you know, a bag full of slips and bras or blouses or things and hawk them along the street, which most of these ladies are HIV positive, so it's a very challenging life for them. But, you know, they're doing well and they're positive, and they just work really hard.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Jennings Wright, who's here and she's just come home. You know, she supports herself. She doesn't get paid for what she does, but basically she's come home to try to raise some additional funds to help just reestablish the women over there and the people. They don't take much, as in the living standards are quite low. And for, you know, less than $50, well, you can get somebody back working again. Now, basically, how can people get in touch with you, Jen?
The best way to donate or contact us, either one, is through our website. It's www.1018.org. The way that's spelled is 10 is a number, 10, and then the word 18. We have a donate button. We have a contact us button. You can also go to the website that's called GoFundMe and put us in the search bar. That's actually where our website will take you, but it's kind of a complicated address, but you can search for 1018, and you will come up with us. We take no administrative fees whatsoever. GoFundMe takes a very small percent. I think it's 1.6% for processing the payment, and the rest of the money goes to the project. So, you know, you can sponsor a child. You can help with this effort in Namwongo. And it really does take a very little amount to make a huge difference in someone's life.
Now, basically, I do talk radio 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. And I can tell you one thing. Nobody got your telephone number. Nobody got your website. You always have to repeat it 2 or 3 times. Don't be bashful. You're asking for money. And you've got to get the information out there so people can write it down. Go ahead.
Okay, so the website is www.1018.org, the number 10, the word 18, so www.10018.org, and there's a contact us button there, there's a donate button there, and that's really the best way to get in touch with us. If you email me generally within 12 hours at the very longest, I'll get back to you, and the donate like I said, we don't take any administrative fees at all. It all goes to the work. So, you know, it's a really not very many nonprofits can say that there's zero administrative fees, but we can't.
Well, now, has anybody talked to the president of the company or any of the high officials about certainly the displacement of these people for no apparent reason, at least no justified reason at the present time?
Well, the interesting thing is that I have an American friend who lives there, and she has the government agency that did this is the KCCA, which is the Kampala City Council Authority, along with the railway. And one of her neighbors is on the KCCA, and they've been doing some beautification projects. Uganda has just got piles of garbage everywhere, and that's one of Kampala's big things. And they've made some strides over the last year to really, you know, improve that sort of thing in the city. And my friend, you know, talks to her on a regular basis. When this happened, she called her because she had not actually heard about it. She heard about it from me in the States. And so she called this lady with KCCA who has yet to return the call now in 3 weeks after, you know, regular conversations. Neighborly conversations. So they don't want to talk about it. They don't. It was really not a thing that was reported on in Uganda. It got out of Uganda by people putting pictures on Facebook, putting pictures on Instagram. A Ugandan pastor friend had heard about it through someone who lived in that area, and he's helping to raise get clothing and stuff. But within the country, this was really not something that was reported. And Uganda has a semi-free press, but when something happens that the president doesn't like, he'll invade the news station and shut them down for a few days. So they don't really report on stuff he doesn't want them to report on very often.
Well, that's sort of like the way it is here in the United States. Under any circumstances, yes. What does Uganda do? What's the source of income? Is this a prosperous nation? Is it just a small amount of poverty? Or is it an impoverished nation with a few wealthy people?
Yes, it's an impoverished nation with a few wealthy people. When the British came and colonized, what they did is in Kenya, they put kind of big cities, Nairobi and Mombasa, and that was more their banking and industrial side, and they basically left Uganda as one giant plantation. Winston Churchill called it the Pearl of Africa. It's got wonderful farmland. It's beautiful, but they really didn't develop it. It was sort of the backyard of Kenya, and so there are some very wealthy people. A lot of them are actually Indians who have been there for generations in sugar and things, but the vast majority of people are very, very poor.
Well, our telephone number, if you have any questions at all for Jennings, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But there's so much going on in Africa we really don't understand. And here's a chance to talk to somebody who's on the front lines.
Cancer was a rare disease 100 years ago, but that isn't true today. A recent study reveals 38% of American women and over 42% of American men either have or will develop cancer during their lifetime, and many will die from that disease. Why has the incidence of cancer increased? Well, most people eat processed food, and processed food contains toxic substances, and the vitamin, mineral, and antioxidant content of processed foods is altered during preparation. What can you do? Most diets are deficient in magnesium, iodine, vitamin C, vitamin D3, antioxidants, and other essential nutrients. So Radio Liberty offers the supplements you need to maintain your health. If you'd like a list of our products or a catalog, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. And our website is radioliberty.com.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it, taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging. Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now 1-866-405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Jennings Wright, and Jennings is an American who has, for the last 5 years, been involved in a Christian mission over in Uganda. Now, basically, Uganda is a fairly... How large is Uganda?
Uganda's got about 30 million people. Population. It's a fairly large country. It's a lot of rural areas. Got a lot of actually now national park game land. The problem is you've got 30 million people and 3 million orphans. It's a very high prevalence of HIV/AIDS in the country, and a lot of the middle, like there's a lot of kids and a lot of grandparents, but that middle parent age people, a lot of them die. So it's a very, very difficult situation there.
Well, basically, what is the rate of AIDS there? I mean, are we talking 20%, 30% of the population? What percentage of the population?
I just read something, and I don't know exactly. I know that it is not the highest incidence rate. It has just recently skyrocketed, and I actually know why that is and predicted it, unfortunately. About a year and a half ago, two years to a year and a half ago, the government started this big campaign to circumcise men. And it was, I mean, everywhere you went, there were signs up. And churches were paying for it, and the government was paying for it. And basically what they implied is that if you got circumcised, then you couldn't get AIDS. And at the time, we're walking around meeting, you know, going to visit our ladies, and their 12-year-olds just been circumcised, you come from school, and this and that. And I, talking to people on the ground, it was like, why is the government basically saying that this is going to prevent AIDS? It's just going to make people think that they can't get it. And that's exactly what's happened. The rate in the last year has skyrocketed. It's very high. It's 30% or something. Virtually every adult woman that I work with is HIV positive. Almost all of them. I would say 80%.
What a terrible, terrible tragedy. Well, basically, Sydney, as far as the country is concerned, is there a Muslim threat? Now, in many areas in Africa, Sydney, there is a definite Muslim threat, and there are the radical Muslims. Are they there, Sydney, in Uganda?
There's a small Muslim population. I think it's about 3 to 4%. There are small mosques around. At the moment, there does not seem to be a radical Muslim action that is living in Uganda. There are some coming down from Somalia. They're mad in Somalia because Uganda has sent peacekeeping forces into the country. So, for instance, they did the bombing at an Ethiopian restaurant a couple of years ago during one of the big soccer matches. Gaddafi, when he was alive, actually was promulgating. He gave the money to Uganda to build a huge mosque. It's huge in Kampala on a hill. And, you know, he was really promoting it. But now that he's gone, while there is a Muslim population, you don't see anybody in the full black burqa. There are people, I mean, they might wear cover their head, but it's usually bright colors and their faces aren't covered and that kind of thing. So there's not too much at this point of the really, you know, orthodox far right or left, whichever direction it is, you know, Muslim, where they're really doing a lot of those bad things.
Okay, fine. If you're out in the listening audience, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Give us a call. Now, basically, do you have any industry at all? Is it mostly simply agricultural?
It's a lot of agriculture. They've got actually a fairly good amount of tourism. Safari is it's beautiful there. It's cheaper than Kenya, and it's the same animals. The Chinese have a huge presence in Uganda. They are doing a lot of different things, a lot of scrap metal work and building dams and things like that. There's a big Chinese presence. The Russians are coming in and doing stuff. The Ugandans themselves, other than agricultural stuff, don't have a lot of industry, unfortunately. So that's something that, you know, they need to be working on.
Now, what about the oil? You mentioned there is oil in the north.
Yes, they have discovered oil in the north just in the last couple of years. The government has discovered the oil. I think it's supposed to be kind of like how theoretically the Saudis do it. You know, the government owns it and all the people are going to benefit, sort of like they did with the diamonds in Botswana, which they really did do that with diamonds in Botswana. But so far, there's not much benefit to the people.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people believe that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Garlic, there's no medicine, natural or pharmaceutical, that can top it. Whether it's your arteries, your immune system, your heart, or your brain, garlic protects in incomparable ways. And garlic not only boosts your immune system, but directly attacks all incoming bacteria, viruses, and fungi. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Most researchers use allicin, garlic's primary active ingredient, which common garlic pills don't produce because acid in the stomach destroys the enzymatic production process. Garlazyme is the exception. Its patented alkaline mineral base protects the enzyme that activates allicin in the acidic stomach. And garlazyme also buffers garlic's pungency, odor, and breath. It's sociable garlic. Buy garlazyme in quantity for less than $9 a month, and shipping is free. Call 866-674-3955 to order garlazyme now. Garlazyme, it's the goodness of Mother Nature for civilized society. 866-674-3955. 674-3955.
Cancer was a rare disease 100 years ago, but that isn't true today. A recent study reveals 38% of American women and over 42% of American men either have or will develop cancer during their lifetime, and many will die from that disease. Why has the incidence of cancer increased? Well, most people eat processed food. And processed food contains toxic substances, and the vitamin, mineral, and antioxidant content of processed foods is altered during preparation. What can you do? Most diets are deficient in magnesium, iodine, vitamin C, vitamin D3, antioxidants, and other essential nutrients. So Radio Liberty offers the supplements you need to maintain your health. If you'd like a list of our products or a catalog, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. And our website is radioliberty.com.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Jennings Wright. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And Jennings, I want you to get your address out one more time in case people would like to help you and your ministry financially in your effort to help the people there in Uganda.
Okay, great. It's www.1018.org. It's the number 10 and the word 18. www.1018.org.
All right. Our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Now, is the president of the company of the country legitimately elected, or certainly is this more or less just an appointment of somebody and they just they rig the elections?
No, he's been elected. This is his sixth term. No, his six-year term. This is his six-year term. He was elected with 61% of the vote this last time. Now, that was way down, because he has been elected with, you know, in the 80s. There's corruption. A lot of people don't vote. A lot of, you know, the voting thing is somewhat irregular. He has been democratically elected. There is some question about the next one, because he has said he's in his 70s, and he has said he's not going to run again. And but also that he believes, you know, in the democratic process. However, he has a son who's in his 30s, I think he's 35 or 36, that he made a brigadier general last year, and he wants this son to be the next president. So there is some concern, particularly among people who are in the opposition to him and have, you know, been working as opposition for the last couple of elections, that he's going to go around the democratic process and just somehow appoint this young brigadier general son to be president. That's 4 years away, a little less than 4 years away. So, I mean, you know, that's speculation now. It certainly would not be out of the realm of possibility. He has said, however, that he is going to step down. He's not going to run again, and that he is going to leave it open for a vote.
All right. Well, now, do you have a telephone number people can call to reach you, or just the only way to get in touch with you is through the website?
Through the website, there's a contact email, you know, contact form for email, and I get back to people right away. We don't maintain an office because we don't take any of the administrative fees, and I don't want to give my cell phone out over the radio, but there is a contact there. I get the emails right away. I respond, you know, quickly to that because it comes to my phone no matter where I am in the world. And so, you know, if they just go to the website, they can either click to donate, they can click to contact, they can see pictures of what's happened in Namalongo, just pictures in general of what we do. There's a lot of things they can do on that website.
Are you safe as an American living in Uganda? Do you target people? Is there a lot of crime?
There's not a lot of violent crime. There's a lot of petty crime, because when you have people who don't have anything, who make, you know, a dollar a day or less, and you have your purse perhaps dangling around and not paying attention, or you leave something in your car that they can break into, that's the kind of thing that happens. Now, I would not at night go wandering around Kampala or Entebbe or Dinja, but I wouldn't do that in my home city either. I mean, you know, there is prudence, but there really is not very much violent crime. It's just a lot more either domestic abuse just because of cultural issues that need to be addressed, or just sort of this petty theft because they steal it to sell it to eat.
Now, then, is there a lot of Christianity there? In other words, is there an active program of Christianity, an active program of trying to recruit people into the Christian faith? And once again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. You have a question. But what about the Christian church there? Is it strong? Is it growing?
It's growing. It is strong. Actually, very large evangelical Anglican church, and the Anglicans broke off from the Church of England over the gay situation, you know, gay priests and all that. The Ugandan Anglican Church actually has a lot of churches in America that came from the Ugandan Anglican Church. It's a very Bible-believing denomination. I work with someone in Dinja where we're building the primary school. They've planted 240 churches. I know groups go out in places where they haven't ever seen a Mzungu, which is a white person, and have planted churches. The Christian faith is the predominant religion. There still is some tribalism. There is the small Muslim contingent. You know, you're never going to have a country where every single person is a Christian, but it is a Christian nation. As a general rule, and churches are welcome, and missionaries are welcome, and a lot of things are being done for God and in the name of Jesus over there.
Well, we had heard that they had the legislature had passed, and the governor had signed legislation that outlawed gay marriage, and that actually the courts had negated the legislation. What's the current status on that?
Well, what happened is that the legislature, and this is a little bit of an Obamacare-type maneuver, I have to say, on the legislature's part. They did one of these holiday passing without a quorum, and this is why the court threw it out. they passed it during a holiday when there was not a quorum of legislators there. It does outlaw gay marriage, but basically what it did is made what they call aggressive homosexuality, which is someone who is recruiting other people into the lifestyle or a repeated relationship or something like that, a life sentence in jail. There were lesser, now it's been, homosexuality has been illegal in Uganda already, but what they did, and they originally put the death penalty, which was then taken off, and they just made it life in jail. And a lot of this was stirred up by some American gay activists who went over there and just did what they do here. But it's a very, very conservative nation, and it's not the only African nation that has outlawed homosexuality. And while our government and liberals were jumping up and down and screaming and having a fit, the Ugandans liked this law. Now, you know, the government of Uganda is for Ugandans. So whether our liberals or government or we as a people thought it was a just law, the government there is for those people, and they actually did like the law. The law has been, and Museveni didn't sign it for about 3 months. He was getting a lot of pushback from our government and some European governments saying they would withhold aid, which indeed they did when he signed it. They immediately started withholding aid because of this law. The government threw it out because it was passed without a quorum. So they can theoretically do it again as long as they do it in a way that meets what the Constitution says they have to do to pass a law. I don't know if they will do it. I don't know if Museveni would sign it because a lot of aid, they lost billions of dollars in aid, and I don't know that they would go through with it again.
Okay, well, we have a caller from Washington State. Ron is calling us from Washington State. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And hi, Ron, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Right. Dr. Stan, you asked the question that I was going to ask, and that was about the sodomy. And I would think if you have a lot of incidents of AIDS, that you certainly would want to penalize sodomy. You certainly wouldn't want to encourage it. That's one of the major ways that AIDS is transmitted.
Now, in Uganda, I will say that is not the primary way it's transmitted. And the first time I took my son there, he was 12. So this led to some very interesting conversations because there are giant billboards, and I mean like the size of a building, talking about getting off the sexual network. The way that is primarily spread there is that men have multiple wives, number one. They are not faithful to their multiple wives, number two. So they get it somewhere, and then they come home and they give it to wife number one, or, you know, who then some can pass it on to children. The children have it. They are on ARVs, so they do grow up and live life, and then they have sex, and maybe they don't take their ARVs. So actually, in Uganda, while it does have some spread in the homosexual community, it is primarily a heterosexually spread disease there.
Okay, fine, Ron. But Sydney, as far as the homosexuality, they do have strong feelings against it. And I think the majority of the people, because of the Christian background, oppose homosexuality. It is simply the influence of America and gay activists going over there that is responsible for the problem. And I really believe God is going to bring judgment on America because of what we have done and our influence throughout the world. At least that's my opinion. Anything else you'd like to ask?
Well, that's the land of Idi Amin, is it not?
Yes, it is the land of Idi Amin. I worked with several people who were alive under Idi Amin. I've heard a lot of really horrible stories about him. Museveni came, a couple of people after him, a Bodhi came after Museveni, and then he was bad too, Museveni was sort of in this group that overthrew Bodhi, and then somebody else was there for a very brief time, like a year, and then Museveni was elected and has been president ever since. So, you know, as African countries go, and you do have to put this caveat on it, as African countries go, it's actually pretty stable, but it's an African country, and there's just a lot of corruption and a lot of violence and a lot of tribal warfare that we just don't get here. We don't understand that Uganda is a country of 40 tribes about, and those tribes, those people are tribal first, not Uganda first. And we don't understand that here. And that's a cause of a lot of problems.
Ron, anything else you'd like to bring up or ask?
Well, I would think if it's a strong Christian influence, where are all those multiple wives coming from?
That is the thing that the Christian church and my pastor friend that I work with primarily there has written a book, and he does a lot of teaching on it, because the multiple wives thing is predates Christianity. And when the missionaries came and Christians got saved, people got saved, made Christians, there was still a lot of cultural issues that went on, and having multiple wives is one of them. Now, there are also Muslims there, not a huge amount, but there are some, and they do believe in polygamy anyway. The other thing is, rather than sort of divorcing someone, they just leave that person. So, like, they have 7 kids with wife number one, they're just done with that, or they leave and go to a different village. And it's not technically, like, in their mind, it's not like Muslim polygamy where they're actively keeping these wives. They just leave one and the family and go off and have a whole nother family, totally ignoring the first one, like that never actually happened. So it's a cultural problem, particularly with the men in Uganda. The women work much harder than the men. Sadly, they need their men to rise up, and there's people working on that as well. But Christianity comes in, and you can't overcome all the cultural issues all at one time. So, it's an ongoing thing. And the best thing is that there are Ugandans trying to change the culture, because when we come in and say, this is how you need to do it, they say, who are you to come in and tell us how we need to do it? But when Ugandans rise up and say, okay, this is what we need to do, then they listen. And that's a much better influence as far as changing the culture than Americans or Europeans coming in and pointing the finger and saying, you shouldn't be doing this.
Well, we have certain scriptural authority, however.
We do, but it's like someone coming into your house and telling you what you need to be doing. Your initial reaction is to sort of rise up and be defensive. And when their own leaders rise up and say, hey, guys, this is what we need to do, that initial, and, I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying that's what happened. And people have been going into Africa and telling Africans what to do for an awful long time. And so what they need is Africans to rise up and say, hey, this is what we need to do, that we are a Christian people, that we're a Christian nation, this is how we need to do it. And there are pastors who are doing that and who are giving their lives to nothing but marriage, really. I mean, Christian marriage, that's what they devote their entire life to, and they are making strides in that. More in cities than in villages.
Okay, Ron, anything else before we let you go?
Well, that's the foundation of society is the family.
You're absolutely right.
And if they're abandoning the family, it's he who will not take care of his own family is worse than an infidel.
You're absolutely right. And hopefully they'll be able to change it there in Uganda. Thanks so much for calling.
We got plenty of problems in that score right here in the U.S. of A.
Amen to that. Bye-bye. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I had a couple questions for Jenny.
Sure.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering about the local business people there. Is there any prospect of them, forming companies that would utilize mm-hmm. local manpower for products that they're able to, sell into the African economy?
The business there is pretty, it's interesting. I mean, if you were at all entrepreneurial and you go there and you just walk around and sort of shake your head, because they do some very odd things. Like, here you would have, a franchise says you can't have another franchise within X number of miles. There they put all the stores that are the same product all in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of takes away some of your competitive edge right there, because you're all right there in a row.
Sure.
They don't produce very many products. Biggest, sugar cane is the biggest thing Uganda does. They've got a ton of sugar cane. they also are hampered by the education system, which is a holdover from the British, when the British came. And so it's not free, number one. So only about half the kids get through it or even get into it, much less through it. They test at P7, which would be our equivalent of eighth grade. And if they don't test beyond a certain level, they can't keep going to school. So then they test a couple other times. And so their system sort of weed people out before they really are grown enough to have potential. And then you really have to know someone to even get a job. Mm. And they don't know people. You know, if you live in the slums, you don't know somebody to give you a job.
Mm-hmm. Mike, it's a whole different world over there. I mean, the values are different, but they do at least have the foundation of Christianity. But it's not suddenly the same Christianity we have here. And as Sydney, as our previous caller, Ron, was saying, I mean, Sydney, one man, one woman, and marriage is the foundation of our society and our family, and they don't adhere to that there. We're going to be back in a moment.
Okay.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulating coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Have you noticed that America is changing? Our nation is changing because public education is systematically destroying our faith in God and country. They have succeeded. What can you do? If you love your children, take them out of public school and consider homeschooling. The Robinson Homeschool Program is a 12-year curriculum devised by a Christian educator. The classes are presented on CDs and dozens of books are included. Thousands of youngsters have taken the course and successfully gone on to college. The modest price is only $195. If you'd like to obtain some additional information, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. So if you love your children and want them to succeed, call 800-544-8927 and ask about the Robinson Homeschool Program.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. And Cindy Jennings is saying that they need young people to come and run for political office there. They don't even necessarily need to come from Uganda, but they need people who know how to work the political process so that they can have an effective one. It's unfortunate that they're trying to do the best they can, but they do not have the leadership they need. Is that a pretty accurate analysis?
It is, because, you know, ever since, so the British were there running things, and then the British put Amin in office. Amin was horrible, killed 300,000 people. Obote came after him. He was awful. You know, then Museveni's been there all these years, basically since independence, you know, this is all they've had. They've never had young people or younger people, you know, 30s, 40s, whatever, with vision, who really don't just say, hey, I'm going to give everybody a stove, which was what Museveni's campaign was last time, 2 years ago. He was going to give everybody a stove, never mind that they don't have electricity, but they were going to have a stove. They don't, he didn't give them a stove, but that was what he said. You know, that's his vision. We're going to give you a stove. They need people who can come in and say, hey, let's look at South Africa. Let's look at Botswana. Let's look at places that are doing well. Look at what they're doing. And let's do that here. Because it can be done, but it can't be done with these men who came from this militarized background, who got where they are by, you know, killing people or crushing people or silencing people. It's got to come from a free market understanding of how the country can take advantage of its resources and its people and grow in a sustainable way.
Well, let's hope and pray that this will happen to Uganda, because it is basically a Christian nation, perhaps not exactly as a Christian nation such as ours. But then, of course, we have a lot of problems, too. Anyway, God bless. Thanks very much for being with us, Jennings, and the best of luck to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. We're dependent upon those of you who listen to our program to help us maintain our network of stations where 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. Our program is heard across America, and of course on the afternoon. We're heard on shortwave, and you can hear us on the internet 24 hours a day, either live or archived. And we really have the privilege of talking to people and bringing them ideas, certainly information they're not going to get through the regular channels and through the regular media. Well, first of all, if you want to understand what's really going on in America, there's a small contingent that controls both political parties. There are perhaps 5,000 of them in the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Trilateral Commission, the Bohemian Grove, Skull and Bones, the upper echelons of Masonry. Now, everybody suddenly is a Mason. Everybody's in the CFR doesn't understand what this is all about, but the leaders do. And that is, of course, they are using the financial and military power of the United States to bring about a world government. The United States runs the world today. We're not interested, certainly, in freedom. We're not interested in democracy. They talk about democracy, but when the people elect somebody and they don't like them, they simply have them replaced or they have them killed. And this certainly is not uncommon. Suddenly we saw that one of the people running for political office, suddenly in one of the countries over there in Europe, he was suddenly his plane went down. And I've seen this over and over and over again, where planes crash when you have somebody, either a leader or somebody challenging the leader who doesn't go along with the idea of a one-world government, a one-world financial system, and the destruction of Christianity. Because the common denominator behind what's going on today is a hatred of Christianity, because this is a Luciferian organization, and many of these people actually do worship Lucifer. And it is from Lucifer they get their ability, they get their wealth. In fact, that's why Robin Williams committed suicide. He was demonically possessed. Joe Schimmel wrote an article. You can get it on the internet. Robert Williams and Sidney's association with Luciferianism. Please pray for America.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America. And that I love, stand beside. guide her, and guide her.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming in from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Western and Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg, who was formerly the senior editor of the New American Magazine, worked for the Republic Magazine. He's writes prolifically. He has a number of books published. He appears regularly on Lou Rockwell. He writes the monthly Radio Liberty newsletter. And without further ado, William Grigg, what are we going to be talking about tonight?
Dr. Stan, it's always a blessing to be with you, and we're going to have to talk about Ferguson. We're going to have to talk about what happened in Missouri and some of the implications here. And the first thing we need to address is the fact that whenever something of this sort happens, it happens with distressing regularity. The powers that be always set the political spin cycle to race agitate, which is one of the reasons why Al Sharpton descended upon this little town of 21,000 people, suburb of St. Louis, that is about 67% to 70% black, and has been afflicted with a very corrupt local police department, in spite of the fact that there is a county police department, there's a St. Louis municipal police department. I believe there's also a county sheriff's office. They don't really need a police department in this town unless it's carrying out the function that statistics suggest that it's carrying out, which is, for lack of a better way of putting it, harassment for the purpose of revenue. And the statistics which were compiled by the Missouri state government make pretty clear that the Ferguson Police Department, which is, I think, 53 or 60 officers strong, had been, I think guilty is not too strong a word, of a pattern and practice of targeting black residents for traffic stops and detentions, in spite of the fact that there's a higher contraband location rate among the white motorists and white suspects that are stopped by police. This is a police department that a few years ago was involved in a terrible incident in which a 52-year-old welder who just happened to take the wrong exit and end up at Ferguson was arrested without cause and then detained without cause and beaten while he was in detention. As a result of mistaken identity, he'd been mistaken for somebody who had the same first and last name, but not the same initial. And after he had complained about the conditions under which he was being held, and he hadn't been told why they had taken him out of his car, why they had detained him, he was thrown to the floor, handcuffed, and then kicked repeatedly, then released a couple of days later, and then charged with felonious destruction of property. Forgive me, not felonious, but gross misdemeanor destruction of property, because he had bled on the uniforms of the police officers who had beaten him. And after this case was taken to trial, the police officers perjured themselves, insisting that in spite of the fact that he signed a criminal complaint to the effect that he had committed property damage at the police station by bleeding on the uniforms, that he hadn't really bled on their uniforms. This is an active federal lawsuit that's going to get new attention now because of what happened during this last week. The Ferguson Police Department has problems. One of the things that was revealed in that lawsuit was that there was no disciplinary or accountability mechanism within the Ferguson Police Department. This all was going on before the incumbent police chief, Thomas Jackson, came into power. But this was going on while Mr. Wilson, Officer Wilson, who has been identified as the officer who shot Michael Brown last Saturday, he was a member of the police department at the time. He had imbibed that culture. And, of course, you've got a roiling mass of frustration. A lot of it is thoroughly justified. And into this cauldron is inserted the likes of the so-called Reverend Al Sharpton, who we know is a federal informant provocateur. Dr. Stan, one of the good things that happened this week is that the people on the ground in Ferguson, Missouri, wanted nothing to do with Al Sharpton. That's a singular blessing, and that's one of the few good things to come out of this tragedy and the aftermath. And so I do think that there are grounds for limited optimism, but things are going to get ugly before they get better.
And yet, of course, there's been a great deal of violence. But is this just a very small part of the black population
that's
involved with all these demonstrations? And, of course, they're pillaging the stores and using it for their own aggrandizement. We'll be back in a moment here.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Garlic, there's no medicine, natural or pharmaceutical, that can top it. Whether it's your arteries, your immune system, your heart, or your brain, garlic protects in incomparable ways. And garlic not only boosts your immune system, but directly attacks all incoming bacteria, viruses, and fungi. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Most researchers use allicin, garlic's primary active ingredient, which common garlic pills don't produce because acid in the stomach destroys the enzymatic production process. Garlazyme is the exception. Its patented alkaline mineral base protects the enzyme that activates allicin in the acidic stomach. And Garlazyme also buffers garlic's pungency, odor, and breath. It's sociable garlic. Buy Garlazyme in quantity for less than $9 a month, and shipping is free. Call 866-674-3955 to order Garlazyme now. Garlazyme, it's the goodness of Mother Nature for civilized society. 866-674-3955.
Now you can get the same survival food U.S. Special Forces use on their toughest field missions. High protein, high energy, freeze-dried foods known as long-range patrol rations or LRPs. Soldiers love LRP rations. They're lightweight and easy to carry. Easy to prepare by just adding water. Easy to enjoy because they taste great. Civilians love LRPs as a solution for emergency preparedness and recreational activities with limited storage space, such as hiking, climbing, sailing, or RV travel. Veteran-owned Freeze-Dry Guy is your exclusive source for this 2013 U.S. military overrun. Long on nutrition, these delicious entrees have a long shelf life, lasting decades. But this rare opportunity, this limited supply, will not last long. You have to act now. Call 866-404-3663, 866-404-FOOD, or log on now to freezedryguy.com, freezedryguy.com.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William simply is pointing out that there are 3 to 4 times as many private security guards and private investigators and people that are hired to protect private property in America as there are members of the police and sheriff's department. And basically, of course, what happened in Ferguson, the vast majority of the people weren't involved. There was just a small number of people that were involved. There were certainly some of the shops that were gutted and attacked and looted. But in those shops where the people were armed and the owners were there with a weapon, why they avoided those? And certainly the day after the initial onslaught, many of the legitimate citizens of Ferguson came down to help clean up the mess and clean up the stores that had been looted. Go right ahead, William.
One of the things that a number of people have said who were attached to the demonstrations opposed to the looting is that many of the people who showed up and took part in this familiar saturnalia of, I guess you'd call it, expense-free shopping, they were people who were from out of town, not only from out of Ferguson, but they were from outside the St. Louis area. And some people said they were actually brought in from Chicago, and Chicago has a surplus of personalities of that sort. That's one of the things that makes life in the second city so stimulating, one supposes. But one of the things I want to underscore here is that I think that Thomas Jackson, the police chief of Ferguson, Missouri, was on sound footing when he said that they were out element of the violence. That being the case, it makes no sense at all that Ferguson's police officers, who had kitted themselves out in paramilitary drag, a camouflage that was patterned after deserts and the similar environments that made them stand out against the backdrop of convenience stores and hair salons and such like, they weren't blending into their surroundings, of course, that they focused their attention not on the people who were looting on Sunday night, or that small handful of people who were throwing Molotov cocktails a couple of nights ago. And essentially, there are video clips that we can see of people throwing Molotov cocktails at private homes. And you have those same homes a short while after being attacked by riot police who are hurling tear gas canisters into private homes and private yards. One of the things that Chief Jackson said is that these were outside agitators. But it makes no sense at all that you'd have the riot police once again focusing on those people who were protesting rather than the people who were actually committing property damage. There were some people arrested after the fact. I don't think that we've yet received an accounting of how many or under what circumstances. There are a handful of mugshots that have been publicized to the larger national audience. But I think that it's important to point out that there are outside agitators in an official capacity that have made this so much worse. And those outside agitators consist primarily of federal agencies, the Pentagon, the Department of Homeland Security. Ferguson, as I said, is a town of about 21,000 people. It has a crime rate that's perhaps a slight amount above the national average, but relatively little violent crime. Michael Brown was a suspect in a strong-arm robbery at a convenience store. We've seen the video footage where somebody who resembles Brown stole a package of cigars and then assaulted a very brave but thoroughly overmatched, very small Asian-American clerk who was doing his best to protect his property. But this is something that was not known to Officer Wilson when they had the encounter on the street a few minutes later. Officer Wilson, according to the young man who was in the company of Michael Brown, who says that that was indeed Michael Brown who was boosting the cigars. He's not been charged, this other witness, has not been charged in connection with that robbery, which I find very significant. But he said that Officer Wilson approached them and told them to get on the blanking sidewalk, and that within a few minutes, you had Michael Brown dead, face down in the street, about 35 feet away from the police vehicle. And the way that the encounter was described by Dorian Johnson, who's the witness, is the officer came bolting out of the car, and that the door slammed against Brown. Brown was 6'4", about 300 pounds. The door apparently ricocheted off his body and then hit the cop and then shoved the cop back into his vehicle. And at some point, he had gone hands-on, Officer Wilson had gone hands-on with Brown, and Brown was trying to extricate himself. There was a gunshot fired. Brown fled. He was hit by a second round. And he hit the ground, held his hands up, saying, okay, I'm unarmed, I give up. And at that point, he was shot and killed. That's the account given by the eyewitness on the scene, who, interestingly enough, wasn't interviewed by the Ferguson police or by the St. Louis County police until several days after the incident. Now, when the loss happened, Wilson had no idea he was dealing with a robbery suspect. And this morning in the press conference, Chief Jackson did his considerable best to confuse the issue by identifying the officer who did the shooting and then releasing a package of information with stills from a surveillance video that was not available at the time of the shooting, in which somebody looking like Michael Brown was involved in the strong-arm assault robbery, thus conveying to the public the impression that Brown was being sought as the suspect in connection with that robbery. He wasn't. This was simply an instinctive reaction, apparently, on the part of this police officer to two people, two young men, who were walking apparently on a street where you didn't have much of a sidewalk to get on. They were not in the street because they were trying to block traffic. If you've taken a look at the photograph, there's basically a large curb. There's not a very spacious or expansive sidewalk. There's no evidence that they were impeding traffic or that they were carrying on mischief of that sort. It's entirely possible that in this encounter, a Brown, who just allegedly beaten up a store clerk and stolen some cigars, may have been a little bit full of himself and perhaps wanted to challenge the police officer. But in my experience, somebody who's just committed a robbery and is worried about being taken into custody would make himself inconspicuous by being pointedly deferential to the police officer. Very well, police officer. Yeah, very well, officer. I'm sorry. I'll get out of the street. And then, of course, you with all deliberate speed leave the area so that you're not caught. It makes little sense at all to think that his first reaction would be to beat up a police officer, which is the the way that the encounter is being described here. But even if you're dealing with somebody who just committed a felony and somebody who's got a potentially violent disposition, under prevailing Supreme Court precedent, it's not legal for a police officer to shoot that fleeing suspect in the back if he's unarmed and he's merely trying to avoid arrest. This is something that grows out of the 1985 Tennessee versus Garner Supreme Court ruling. And a few days ago, I wrote a piece, I think it's Tuesday or Wednesday, I wrote a piece about this. Rather than talking about what happened in Ferguson, I talked about what happened in that case from actually 1974. It took 11 years for the Supreme Court to rule on the appeal. In that case, you had a teenager, 17, 18 years old, different body type than Michael Brown. Edward Garner in Memphis, Tennessee, was short and of slight build, and he was discovered by a police officer whose last name was Hyman, who had been brought into the neighborhood on a call that there was a prowler in a nearby building, nearby home, actually residence. And when he arrived on the scene, he saw Garner trying to flee through a backyard and scale a fence. Officer Hyman gave him a command to halt, and Garner refused to. And so at this point, the officer discharged his weapon, and he struck Garner in the back of the head with one of the rounds he fired, killing Edward Garner. In his possession was found a total of $10. So he had apparently just committed an act of burglary by breaking into a home. Under Tennessee law at the time, police were authorized to use any necessary force in order to arrest a resisting suspect or subdue one who was fighting. And this is an outgrowth of what was called the any felony rule. If you're somebody who's suspected of committing any felony and you try to avoid capture under that rule, then the police officer was entitled to use lethal force if necessary to bring you in. And this isn't something that's of ancient vintage. If I understand correctly, this is a relatively new, at the time, it was a relatively new innovation in the standards and practices of police agencies. Go back to the middle of the 19th century when police agencies were first starting to proliferate across the country. There was an 1858 editorial by the New York Times that was complaining about the fact that New York police officers were frequently shooting fleeing suspects rather than taking other measures to bring them in and actually have them undergo a trial, give them due process in order to determine whether or not they were guilty of the apparent crimes for which they stood accused. And what they said in that editorial, and this is one of the few sensible editorials the New York Times has ever published, in my opinion, is that police really shouldn't be in a position summarily to execute a suspected criminal who's fleeing. And that's something which was understood at the time, but set aside, and this any felony rule was put in place. Now, this incident in Memphis, Tennessee, once again, it happened in 1974, the episode with this 17-18-year-old Edward Garner. And his father filed a federal lawsuit, and it worked its way through the court. The shooting was upheld by appellate courts in Tennessee, and by 1984, it was accepted by the Supreme Court. They granted certiorari and heard oral arguments in 1984. The following year, they handed down a ruling in which they said in so many words that it is an unreasonable taking under the Fifth Amendment, Fourth and Fifth Amendment, unreasonable seizure under the Fourth Amendment, an unreasonable taking under the Fifth Amendment for a police officer to shoot a fleeing suspect who is unarmed. This is not, in other words, something that was constitutionally sound. And so since that time, Garner has been the legal benchmark to assess the conduct of police officers in lethal shooting involving unarmed suspects. And there is a doctrine called the reasonable officer standard, which has grown out of Garner and out of a couple of other cases. And under the reasonable officer standard, it's assumed that an officer on the scene who uses lethal force is in the best position to make an assessment of the threat posed by a fleeing suspect. And so it's become standard for police agencies to define the circumstances of a lethal shooting in such a way that the actions of the police officer are considered reasonable, even if they involve shooting an unarmed suspect in a situation where the suspect didn't pose an obvious threat to himself or to somebody else on the scene. And I suspect that's what's going to happen here in Ferguson, Missouri. I suspect that they're going to be sculpting the narrative in such a way that they will treat it as reasonable to shoot this young man in the back, in spite of the fact that he wasn't suspected of a crime at the time. That's an important element of the story.
that really cannot be ignored, and I think there's going to be an effort to try to obfuscate it.
Our guest, William Gregg, will be back here in just a moment to evaluate, suddenly, is this a case of suddenly police brutality?
Cancer was a rare disease 100 years ago, but that isn't true today. A recent study reveals 38% of American women and over 42% of American men either have or will develop cancer during their lifetime. And many will die from that disease. Why has the incidence of cancer increased? Well, most people eat processed food. And processed food contains toxic substances, and the vitamin, mineral, and antioxidant content of processed foods is altered during preparation. What can you do? Most diets are deficient in magnesium, iodine, vitamin C, vitamin D3, antioxidants, and other essential nutrients. So Radio Liberty offers the supplements you need to maintain your health. If you'd like a list of our products or a catalog, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. And our website is radioliberty.com.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it. Taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging. Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now 1-866-405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
And of course, the whole issue with this young man who's been shot in the back as he was trying to flee. He went down to the ground, put his hands up and said, "I surrender, don't shoot." And at that point, the officer took his gun and shot him in the back of the head. That's pretty hard to justify. And yeah. Apparently, there were how many people do we have who actually have verified this?
At least three eyewitnesses given accounts that comport with that description of what happened. And it makes more sense than the official story that we've been given here. And the other aspect of this that I find very disturbing, first of all, is that police officer after the shooting. There was a call to dispatch after there had been a report in the media about the shooting. And there were two or three officers on the scene within about 5 minutes, and none of them rendered aid or none of them called for paramedics to arrive and render aid to Michael Brown. Even if he's dead, even if he appears to be dead to the police officers, you have to call the EMTs. You have to have medical personnel on the scene in order to confirm whether or not he's dead. That's not something that a police officer can do. You need a competent medical professional on the scene to determine if there's a possibility of saving this young man's life. But he was allowed, his lifeless body was allowed to sit in the street face down for a considerable period of time. I'm not sure how long. One account says 4 hours. I think that might be too much. But it was for a considerable period of time, but it was never retrieved by an ambulance. It was stuffed into the back of a police SUV. There's a video that shows this. Never did you have intervention by medical professionals to determine if there was a possibility of saving this young man's life. He was just sat, he was just allowed to sit there face down until he died, and then his lifeless body was carted away as if it were so much refuse. And I think that's what really set off the frustration of the people in this neighborhood. They'd just seen this kid shot down for reasons that nobody could understand, because he was not, from the perspective of the people who witnessed this or the people who saw the aftermath, it was not the case that Brown was posing a threat to anybody in that neighborhood. And then after this happened, his body was left to molder in the streets as if it were a discarded piece of meat. And that's when the protests coalesced over what had happened here. And those protests, of course, attracted the attention of people of violent disposition and an opportunistic nature who decided that they would express their discontent with the behavior of the police department in Ferguson by going out and destroying property and stealing goods that they had paid for. And off of that, of course, you had the snowball effect, the mutually reinforcing violent tendencies on the part of the street criminals, and then the riot police. And the behavior of the riot police, of course, is what most people have commented upon, that they turned Ferguson, literally, the parts of Ferguson in any case, into an occupied war zone. There were police officers on the ground saying, this is a war zone. No, it's not a war zone. This is a residential neighborhood. No, you're not dealing with insurgents. You're dealing with angry people who are protesting. But the methods being used by the Ferguson PD, of course, were right out of the counterinsurgency playbook. They were using federally provided military hardware, military-grade weaponry, including so-called less lethal weaponry. Look, rubber bullets are reliably lethal. They're not quite as lethal as tasers, but they can kill. And then CS gas, and then LRAD noise incapacitation technologies, and armored vehicles. And they were firing CS canisters into the yards and homes of people who were not involved in the protest. And this is going on while you had other police officers who were arresting journalists for no good reason, taking over restaurants. There's this remarkable footage of two armored police officers, or actually several, entering a McDonald's restaurant and shutting it down without invitation or permission. You cannot do that. You know, a police officer can't simply walk into a business and say, I'm shutting down this business, you better leave or I'm going to arrest you. As far as I can tell, there's nothing that would justify that behavior by a police officer. The last time I saw that kind of thing, Dr. Stan, was when I was in Guatemala in 1983, close to August 1983, as it turns out, it was the month of August, during the military coup that unseated President Efrain Ríos Montt. You had people with the military move into the little town where I was living. It's called La Democracia, ironically enough, in the near the Guatemalan coastal region, and they simply took over buildings. They simply booted out proprietors and booted out owners and took over the buildings, the staging areas. It was the same thing that you saw going on in Ferguson. You had a reporter for the Washington Post and another reporter for the Huffington Post who were, I don't think the right word is arrested, they were abducted at gunpoint without legal cause or justification. In one case, you had one of them have his head slammed into a wall as a gratuitous act of sadism by one of the police arrested him. You see, that's the type of behavior that really set people off. And it was all done to suppress the discontent that had been triggered by, catalyzed by, what appears to be a thoroughly unjustified use of lethal force against an 18-year-old, an unarmed 18-year-old, who was later identified as a criminal suspect. At the time, he was not a criminal suspect. He was somebody who was guilty of mouthing off to a cop. That's the sort of thing that triggers the kind of discontent that leads to riots, or at least is capitalized upon by people who want to make riots.
Well, you hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with William Grigg.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Garlic, there's no medicine, natural or pharmaceutical, that can top it. Whether it's your arteries, your immune system, your heart, or your brain, garlic protects in incomparable ways. And garlic not only boosts your immune system, but directly attacks all incoming bacteria, viruses, and fungi. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Most researchers use allicin, garlic's primary active ingredient, which common garlic pills don't produce because acid in the stomach destroys the enzymatic production process. Garlazyme is the exception. Its patented alkaline mineral base protects the enzyme that activates allicin in the acidic stomach. And Garlazyme also buffers garlic's pungency, odor, and breath. It's sociable garlic. Buy Garlazyme in quantity for less than $9 a month, and shipping is free. Call 866-674-3955 to order Garlazyme now. Garlazyme, it's the goodness of Mother Nature for civilized society. 866-674-3955.
Cancer was a rare disease 100 years ago, but that isn't true today. A recent study reveals 38% of American women and over 42% of American men either have or will develop cancer during their lifetime, and many will die from that disease. Why has the incidence of cancer increased? Well, most people eat processed food. And processed food contains toxic substances, and the vitamin, mineral, and antioxidant content of processed foods is altered during preparation. What can you do? Most diets are deficient in magnesium, iodine, vitamin C, vitamin D3, antioxidants, and other essential nutrients. So Radio Liberty offers the supplements you need to maintain your health. If you'd like a list of our products or a catalog, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. And our website is radioliberty.com.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly William thinks that certainly the officer will be exonerated in this instance, but there will be a lawsuit that will go all the way to the Supreme Court. And, of course, the question is, are you ever justified when a patient's laying face down on the ground with their hands over their head, shouting, I surrender, don't shoot, to shoot him in the back of the head? And basically, suddenly, I think, hopefully, the Supreme Court will say that is not justified and some action will be taken. Probably the officer will never be convicted and sent to prison, but at least there'll be several $1 million given to the family. But go right ahead.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is that there's going to be a very large settlement in order to obviate the case from having a long-term lasting consequences on the policymakers in the area. But I do think eventually this some version of this controversy is going to make it to the Supreme Court, because I think there's an active question here. And that is whether Missouri's state statutes are in compliance with the standards that were set out almost 40 years ago, almost 30 years ago in the Tennessee versus Garner ruling. And that's one aspect of this that's important. The other aspect of it that's important here is that you're dealing with a thoroughly federalized pocket of militarism on the part of the Ferguson Police Department, a really bad culture, a complete lack of accountability, and lack of transparency, use one of the voguish buzzwords that we hear in these contexts. And I want to point out as well that St. Louis itself itself has been a bit of a hotbed for some of the more exotic experiments being conducted by the Department of Homeland Security and by the Pentagon here in terms of consolidating federal and local law enforcement with the military and intelligence. St. Louis is the home of a fusion center. A fusion center, of course, is a joint federal-state operation through the Department of Homeland Security where they collate intelligence on people, and that they also, and it's also used to disseminate, disseminate that propaganda and propagandize police officers on the latest ideological standards that the Homeland Security state has contrived. It was the state of Missouri, you'll recall, back in 2009, Dr. Stan, that had a fusion center which put out this report on the new malicious threat and how the entire radical right had supplanted Islamic terrorists as the enemy du jour, the domestic enemy of greatest import. And that, of course, has been the default position of the federal government since the early 1990s. They were really in a rather uncomfortable position trying to turn the Islamic movement, the Muslims, Islam itself, into the number one enemy. They're not particularly comfortable in that role, and at the earliest opportunity, they reverted to the form. They said, well, if you're somebody who believes in limited government and the Second Amendment, the Ninth and Tenth Amendments, if you talked about interposition and nullification, if you believe in federalism, if, for instance, in the course of a conversation with somebody, you invoke the Constitution, and particularly the most troublesome elements there of the Second Amendment being the most notorious, then you're somebody who's an incipient terrorist, and you're somebody who deserves the scrutiny of the federal government. That's something that generated, that mindset is something that generated that 2009 report that was put up by a Missouri fusion center. You've got a fusion center in St. Louis that's been involved not only in propagandizing local police about the dangers of domestic insurrection, but they've also been involved in junkets overseas. You have the police chief of St. Louis County, the former police chief of St. Louis County, traveled to Israel back in 2011, where he and a number of other municipal police chiefs were given indoctrination sessions by Israeli military and intelligence personnel. And that's wrong from so many different perspectives, the first of which is that there's no reason at all why you should have domestic police chiefs being tutored by the military, whether it's the United States military or the military of any other country, whatever you think of that country and its government. That's simply wrong, because those are not the same missions. The mission of the military is discreet from the mission of a domestic law enforcement agency, or at least it should be. The second big problem, of course, is that you're dealing here with a mindset that is more conducive to occupation, because of Israel's unique situation. They have been, for decades, an occupying power. And that, of course, creates certain habits of mind that are not compatible with the perspective of an American peace officer. Once again, irrespective of what you think about the circumstances that led to Israel being, for all intents and purposes, an occupying power with respect to Gaza, with respect to the West Bank, whether or not you think that's a good arrangement or a bad arrangement, that arrangement really is not a good model to apply to America's domestic law enforcement if America's supposed to be a constitutional republic. But that's something that was in the air and part of the training and indoctrination of police officers in St. Louis County, and St. Louis County encompasses Ferguson, Missouri. So you're dealing with, I think, sort of a paradigmatic slice of the larger problem in our country here, which is the federalization and militarization of nominally local law enforcement, and short-circuiting any type of accountability that might put these agencies back on a constitutional leash. And in the crucible of the upheaval during the last week, you've seen sort of the rendered essence of what American law enforcement has become. And one of the good things about this, and you hate to say that there's anything good about an incident that grows out of the death of an 18-year-old, albeit an 18-year-old apparently had a capacity for bullying, violence, and wasn't terribly fastidious about other people's property. You don't like to say that there's anything good necessarily to come out of this. But there's a very active discussion going on right now, as you're probably aware, Dr. Stan, not only among the usual suspects, that is to say, the ACLU and left-leaning libertarian or civil libertarian types, but also on the establishment right here about what has happened to American police agencies. This is something I've been talking about since 1993. I started writing and speaking about the then incipient American police state when I was a columnist for the Utah Daily Herald. I wrote a series back in 1993, a four-part series called The Saga of a Government Run Amok, that started with the Waco episode and then extended to include the rapid militarization of law enforcement, the name of the war on drugs. The Donald Scott case was one of the things I wrote about in the early 1990s. Then after I went to the New American about a year later, there was a monumentally successful issue of the New American magazine called Toward a Police State that was devoted entirely to the dangers of militarizing law enforcement and the expanding federal control over what should be a local function. And beginning in the middle of the last decade, I started focusing on this, some might say monomaniacally, but I had become, I think alarmed is too pallid a term, I had become frantic over the fact that the mindset of law enforcement had mutated into something that was genuinely dangerous. And this is being driven in large measure by the war on drugs. Dr. Stan, the first time you and I talked about the war on drugs was in 1994. I remember the conversation vividly. This is not a new problem. It didn't begin with Obama. Obama certainly has exacerbated it. I mean, that's been his unique gift, is that he's been able to identify the worst trends in public policy and then own them and enlarge upon them. Something that really is his singular accomplishment. He's not so much an innovator. He's somebody who's perfected the worst elements of what the government's already been doing. And so under his administration back in 2009, as part of the stimulus program, let us not forget, the Obama administration earmarked, I think, between $4 and $6 billion to flow through the COPS program. That's the central node for federalizing police since the 1994 Omnibus Crime Bill under Clinton. And also through the Burn Memorial Grant Program, which is the chief funding mechanism for the war on drugs. And so in the name of building the economy, the Obama administration poured all these billions of dollars into federalizing and further militarizing local law enforcement. And one of the beneficiaries of this completely unwarranted largesse was the Ferguson Police Department, which has been credibly implicated in racially invidious policies that have done nothing at all to protect the property rights of the people living in that town, and a great deal to alienate the local police from the population they supposedly serve. And so I think that we have to uproot this thing. We don't really see any real proposals right now on the part of anybody in mainstream politics to do anything beyond pruning the bush, pruning the plant. And if you prune a tree, of course, it grows stronger. You have to attack the root of the problem. And there are a number of rips that sort of spread out the taproot of this whole monstrosity. And the taproot, you always point out, Dr. Stan, is the spiritual one. The problem is that people have forgotten or rebelled against God's law. You know, the golden rule is God's law for life. It's universal. There are no exceptions to it. It applies to everybody. That's, of course, the taproot of the problem here, is the people, whether in public life or private life, don't obey the golden rule. Michael Brown had obeyed the golden rule, he wouldn't have been beating up on a shopkeeper, assuming, of course, that the individual in that videotape is Michael Brown. He wouldn't have been beating up on this poor, terrified shopkeeper and stealing his property. That's something you don't do if you obey the golden rule. If Officer Wilson had been obeying the golden rule, he might have politely chided two young men for walking in the street rather than walking on the sidewalk, and he wouldn't have escalated this conflict to the point where lethal force was used under circumstances that really don't seem at all justifiable. That's the taproot of the problem, but some of the auxiliary roots or some of the satellite roots that have to be attacked here, because the golden rule issue is one that transcends politics, that's one that requires reformation. But some of the policy roots that have to be addressed here, that have to be cut, first of all, we have to do away with the war on drugs. I honestly think that probably the majority of the problems we're having right now with police misconduct, police corruption, militarization of law enforcement, the perversion of due process or the suspension of due process, I believe the majority of this difficulty could be addressed if we would do away with the federal war on drugs. That doesn't mean, of course, that we would heedlessly encourage people to go out and adulterate their minds with mind-altering substances. That's not the state of affairs that existed before Prohibition began, back in the 19th century, our pious and morally disciplined ancestors had no laws against the consumption of marijuana or opium or cocaine. Cocaine was available as a topical analgesic in apothecaries. It was advertised in kids' magazines as a toothache remedy. People used preparations for cough and for cold that included such things as opium derivatives and cocaine. They didn't get addicted for the most part. There are always weak-willed people who will get addicted. They're between 3 and 4% of the population who try these substances. That's true whether or not you have prohibition. But we're not going to make people righteous through government policy, and we should abandon the conceit that that's possible, because that's what drives prohibition. And prohibition is the biggest boon to organized crime in the world, whether you're talking about the criminal underworld or the criminal overworld in politics and law enforcement. So if we were to do away with that, that's something that's would address one of the major elements here of the problem, which is leading to police militarization. They call it a war on drugs. It is a war.
And let me interrupt for a moment. Basically, ladies and gentlemen, what very, very few Americans understand is the CIA is the largest purveyor of drugs in the world. The CIA is the largest purveyor of drugs in the world. If you don't believe me, just go up on your search engine, type it in. You'll find this is true. And so on one hand, the CIA is pushing drugs and using the profits from it for their efforts to establish this one world government. On the other hand, one of the major functions of the federal government is to fight the war on drugs. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly.
For everyone for coming today. I serve as director, founder and director of the Lawfare Project, which is a not-for-profit based here in New York, which is dedicated to monitoring and exposing and combating the phenomenon of lawfare, which is the use of the law as a weapon of war. Now, Eugene's going to talk. He's going to give a wonderful, objective analysis of the international law that applies to what we call settlements in the West Bank and the Samaria. But I think also in light of the recent terror attacks in Boston, that it's particularly important that we also focus for about 5 minutes on another tactic used by lawfare proponents, and that is the filing of frivolous and malicious lawsuits against those in the counterterrorism community who have been working to expose the root cause of terrorism and who are working and who are brave enough to write openly and speak publicly about the threat of Islamist terrorism. And there are plenty of examples of this, and many of you probably have heard of the Islamic Society of Boston. This is a mosque/community center that was actually attended by the younger Boston bombing suspect, where the imam is not only linked to the Muslim Brotherhood, but he's known for giving sermons that incite violent jihad against the West. Now, I'm not saying that there's any connection between this imam and the Boston bombing suspect, but what's to note here is that when Fox News and the Boston Herald and 17 other media outlets were writing articles about the ISB and about this mosque and the fact they were receiving funds from Saudi Arabia, from the Wahhabi regime of Saudi Arabia, they were sued by ISB in a frivolous lawsuit that was designed to shut them up.
Well, before we go on, William, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your website, how they can sort of get your material, how they can get your PayPal.
When you have the opportunity in a court of law to prove what you're saying is true.
Go right ahead.
Now, right before the discovery process, where the defendants would discover the financial documents of ISB and go forth and prove what they were saying, ISB mysteriously dropped the case. We have, for example, the Islamic Circle of North America, which has ties, physical ties with Hamas, which is a designated terrorist group in this country. It has financial ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. Had a family fun day targeting children in Texas, where they arranged for children and the families to come to the Six Flags Park. And when American citizen and activist Joe Kaufman staged a peaceful, lawful
called Freedom Zealot Radio Show broadcast Saturday night.
But not by IKNA. He was sued by Liberty seven Radio Dallas Network, area Islamist organizations, whom he had never mentioned, whom he had never spoken about, and obviously that suit was thrown out of court because they had lacked any type of standing. And of course, we have one of the largest proponents of this type of lawfare aimed at silencing and intimidating the counterterrorism community is CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, which is an uninvited co-conspirator in a Hamas funding trial. It was called, quote, a fundraising arm for Hezbollah by former Congressman Cass Ballinger. And of course, Cass Ballinger was sued by CARE after he spoke to the media about the Council on American Islamic Relations, and the judge threw that out of court because obviously the congressman was acting within his public duties.
Now, and of course, William writes the monthly Radio Liberty newsletter now that the defendants still use the time and discipline, as you know, we do have an illness, so I just don't have the ability to do whatever is doing a wonderful job. And if you subscribe to Radio Liberty Family and support it, you'll get
William's fear of being called Islamophobic. If you talk about
what's really going on in the world,
terrorism, and that results in complacency. We're all very surprised that this happened in Boston, when in reality, we should all be very
gold
thankful
and silver is tremendously
that this is the
undervalued.
First time since 9/11 that we had a successful attack.
By more than
and, well, not thankful
annually.
For the attack, obviously, but thankful that nothing has happened before. And we're all in a state of confusion. What is terrorism? Most people, you know, after 9/11, you go
our
and walk
faces
downtown.
Challenges on
take
many
a survey.
Fronts,
ask 10 people how to define terrorism. I guarantee the majority of those people will not be able to define terrorism.
There's never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver.
Terrorism is when anybody loads up
we believe in providing the quality
unfortunately that's
quality
not an accurate description of the crime of terrorism
arms of precious metals,
and why
including
is
American
that
gold,
it is
silver,
because there's
platinum,
a coordinated effort
and
both on the international
silver
level and here within the United States to create this
investor.
Confusion
gold
for example
IRAs are available.
Last year
Congressman
Peter King held the first of a series of hearings in Congress about homegrown radicalization. Peter King put Somali
parents
on the
stand. Have you noticed that America is changing? Our nation is changing because public education is systematically destroying our faith in God and country.
We're being targeted within our borders.
What can you do?
By Al-Qaeda.
If you love your children, take them out of public school and consider homeschooling.
Across
the Robinson
the border
homeschool
to Pakistan
program
and to
is a 12-year curriculum devised by a Christian educator. The classes are presented on CDs and dozens of books are included.
Publications like the
thousands of youngsters have taken the course and successfully gone on to college. The modest price is only $195.
If
you'd like to obtain some additional information, call
800-544-8927. Ray Kelly.
That's 800-544-8927. So if you love your children and want them to succeed, call 800-544-8927. And ask about the
Ray
Robinson
Kelly
homeschool
also
program.
Called an Islamophobe for teaching Americans about the threat of
most
homegrown
men, when
radicalization.
They reach 60 years of age, have and urinary tract problems.
One of the
they have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times
Ray Kelly's
every night.
Resignation,
what's
the
solution?
Council on American
many
Islamic
men use
relations.
A herbal product called
in the meantime,
prostate support.
The Lawfare
it
Project
saw
is the only organization
and stinging
that
thistle.
Exposed
it's available from Radio Liberty.
That Hezbollah
Dr. Stan
and
takes
Hamas
prostate support
are both
and recommends
unlawfully
and thousands
currently
of men
airing
take
their television programs
because it relieves their
United
urinary
States
tract
and
symptoms.
And we have
if you would
an
like
internship
to try
program. One of our interns,
call
Ina, are you here? Can you stand up? While doing research for the Lawfare Project, she is the one who discovered that Hezbollah and Hamas were brazenly
once again, the
advocating
number
a company called Nowset IPTV,
is
but they're broadcasting their television shows within this country, and yet
and
the
I suggest
counterterrorism
today.
Community has been raising awareness about this, and the Attorney General's office hasn't done anything, and the security hasn't done anything. Finally, I just want to mention also where this is coming
this
from. Where is the intimidation against
America.
Our counterterrorism?
Are anticipating there's going to be
well, every year for the past 12
years,
the United Nations
why
Human Rights
are militarizing
Council has passed
our police,
a resolution
our police
that attempts to outlaw what they call the defamation of religion in international customary law.
Why would they need armored personnel carriers? Why would they need a military
Human Rights Council Resolution 719 is a particularly Orwellian
basically, they're issuing machine handguns and
criticism of religion illegal, but it also says that thinking thoughts, ideas that are can't be used militarily can only be used on the population. A violation of international law. Now, one of the more recent Human Rights Council resolutions, 1618, which follows this long line of attempts to criminalize the definition of
Doomsday seed bank. That's a place about 800 miles from the North Pole.
And it targets specifically the counterterrorism community, talking about Islamist terrorism in the media.
When they start in all over again, they know something big is about to happen.
The United States.
Now, what
this past December, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton had a two-day closed-door meeting
to get into these underground tunnels. That people who try to get in there, I'm sure, will be shot and killed. But you do need to make preparations for yourself and your family. And you do need to understand we are involved.
Afterwards, they came up and announced the implementation of this resolution.
There really are people out there who worship a different God and who believe that Satan,
because their presentations are deemed Islamophobic.
Is the source of all strength, and these people have given themselves over to them. Suddenly, recently, everybody was surprised when Robin Williams committed suicide.
Where it is classified as
he was deeply involved in the occult. And when he
and
went on the stage,
the biggest victims of this are the families
would come
of the victims
over and provide him with
the
ideas and the jokes
for damages
and
under the terrorism statute. And of course,
what
he
was concerned about, he was concerned
that
Nathan Adel Hassan's
bank account was emptied by his brother, and the funds were given to Hamas, a designated terrorist group. This was not entered into evidence in the case because it was not of terrorism.
Media is controlled.
And we now have
Chair
and Isma, the Islamic Society of North America,
major,
which are both Muslim
media outlets in America, AOL, Time
Warner,
Bertelsmann,
Al-Qaeda,
the Viacom that controls CBS,
the city
Disney that controls ABC, the Comcast that controls
NBC. Now, the Lawfare Project is committed to seriously examining and exposing these issues amongst others. We have an article that just came out.
World occult movement. This is not happening.
That goes into much further detail about what I was just talking about.
The six major banks, which control
67%
of the financial assets of our nation.
It's available here for sale. It's $10.
There are probably not more than 4,000 or 5,000.
The reason why we wrote it,
that's
well
organized and they control our universities.
As a Canadian, I came here to the United States to practice law because I have a deep
religious
organization, the American Constitution.
I can
extremely troubled when almost every month I would get a phone call or two from members of the media or from American citizens asking me if blasphemy was a crime in this country. If you could write and speak publicly about religion in terrorism and so we wrote a book that basically examines what your protections are under the First Amendment. You don't have to be a lawyer to understand it, and I highly recommend anyone interested in that subject.
The Brotherhood of Darkness.
So,
and
with that,
the,
I will introduce our next
monopoly.
Speaker.
And we have
the Lawfare
so many,
Project hosts along with
four CD sets. We have a new four CD set on dangerous electricity.
And which reminds me, if you want
to get on into the fact that Sydney,
the sign out sheets
from Wi-Fi and broadband,
this is a particularly important event.
Smart meters and smart
and I'm a big fan of Professor Contreras because he has a knack for taking very complicated issues and making them very accessible.
He
has a very accurate presentation. I believe we have the PowerPoint duplicated within your handouts here. He will speak for about 55 minutes, and then we will open up to a Q&A period.
We'll be back here in just a moment with Radio Liberty.
Thank you all for being here today and for taking time out for lunch to learn about this important subject. Let me frame the scope of our discussion today. We are talking about the legality under international law of the Jewish presence in the West Bank and the Jewish civilian communities and settlements in the West Bank and Golan Heights. The mainstream view amongst international lawyers, reflected in the press, is quite easily described. It's that Israel has no right.